This Week in Radical History for the week starting June 15th.
Heads up.
It's Hardball. Joining me is Newt Gingrich. Newt, he said recently that Americans are surrounded by paganism.
Yes, good sir, I did make such a decree, for paganism infests our villages, devours our crops, and possesses our womenfolk. Like my first wife, whom I had to divorce while she was recovering from the Wiccan-caused cancer, lest she infect me with her dirty wiles, now do here. All God-fearing folk must gather yon torches and prepare the stakes on which we shall burn and the pools in which we shall drown the pagans that surround us.
Ha! You said yawn. We'll be back on Hardball.
Doesn't it make sense that you want Iran to believe that if they keep this up, they might be the subject of a devastating military strike of the kind that only the United States of America can mount? I would think so.
America was founded in part with the intention of seeing this false religion destroyed.
If it were up to you, would you go and take out Iran's nuclear facilities right now?
I would use military force against Iran's nuclear program.
The Iranian regime needs to know that if it stays on its present course, the international community is prepared to impose serious consequences.
You would strike Iran right now?
I would have done it before this.
So I've told people that if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon.
A great many people are concerned about Iran.
We need to take it seriously.
First atomic U.S. bomb test, codename Trinity.
A few people laughed. A few people cried. Most people were silent. I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty. Him takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds."
Inspiration for this week in Radical History comes from the Slingshot Organizer, and Radical info can be found at the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
Again this week, some audio is borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, and from the Neighborhood Network of Columbus, Ohio, including this short segment.
On this day, June 15th, in 1381, the great English peasant revolt was halted by the killing of one of its principal leaders, Wat Tyler. Tyler and others objected to the taxation of British subjects by the king, and especially to abuses against citizens committed by the royal tax collectors. Tyler and his allies also called for an end to feudalism throughout England. Leading a group of some 100,000 rebels, Tyler managed to capture Canterbury and the Tower of London on June 14th, and called for a meeting on June 15th with King Richard II to negotiate a treaty. Tyler attended the rendezvous unarmed and alone, with his recruits watching from some distance, whereupon the mayor of London and another of the king's party killed Tyler with their swords. Soon thereafter, the king's soldiers rounded up the rebel leaders and killed them too. The policies which inspired the rebellion would remain unchanged.
Also for June 15th, 1898, in our country, Congress passes the Newlin Resolution to annex Hawaii, part of the spoils of the Spanish-American War and aggressive U.S. global expansion and support of corporations that wanted the island's fruit. Also on June 15, 1917, anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman are arrested and charged with conspiracy to, quote, induce persons not to register, unquote, for World War I military service. Both would spend time in prison and deport and banned from the land of the free. Back outside our country in 1919, the founding of the Federation of Anarchist Communists of Bulgaria, FACB, in Sofia, Bulgaria. Federation members include Ivan Nikolov, one of Bulgaria's most popular speakers, murdered by the fascist government in 1925. The Federation published the theoretical review, Free Society. Also on June 15, 1950, Cold War hysteria. Senate opens investigations of 3,500 alleged, quote, sex perverts, unquote, also known as homosexuals, in the federal government. Also on this date in 1954, Joe McCarthy declares physicist Robert Oppenheimer, the man's voice you heard earlier, who gave us the Trinity program and the first atomic bomb, McCarthy considers him a security risk. Oppenheimer would be blacklisted for his patriotic efforts. Also on this date in 1991, Animal Liberation Front, the ALF, activists burn Furry Supply Warehouse in Everest, Washington. This week in Radical History for June 16th.
In Canton, Ohio, in 1918, socialist presidential candidate Eugene Debs delivered a historic speech before an audience of some 1,200 members of the Ohio Socialist Party, in which he voiced opposition to the U.S. involvement in World War I at the time. Several prominent socialists had been jailed under the Espionage Act for speaking against the war, and on the basis of Debs' speech in Akron, he too would be prosecuted and jailed for a time. Part of Debs' Akron speech went as follows, quote, "It is the working class who fights all battles, the working class who makes the supreme sacrifices, the working class who freely shed their blood and furnish the corpses, and yet have never had a voice in either declaring war or making peace. It is the ruling class that invariably does both. They alone declare war, and they alone make peace. Yours not to reason why, yours but to do and die. That is their motto, and we object on the part of the awakening workers of this nation." In 1920, while still in prison, Debs ran for the presidency on the Socialist Party ticket and received more than 1 million votes.
Also on this date in 1920, Marines land again in Haiti, protecting American interests. Also on this date in 1937 in Spain, members of the PUM, Executive Committee, and foreign activists are rounded up. George Orwell was a member of the PUM. The PUM is outlawed and its militants prosecuted by the counter-revolutionary Stalinist and Republic's police. Ethel MacDonald famously smuggled in food and letters to those in jail. She helped several foreign anarchists escape from Spain, borrowing clothes for their disguises and getting them aboard foreign ships. She was finally captured and imprisoned herself. In prison, she helped organize the hunger strikes in every prison that there was anarchist prisoners. Last on this date, in 1964, armed white men surround the Mount Zion Methodist Church in Philadelphia, Mississippi, and after beating several blacks, burn the church to the ground. This week in Radical History for June 17th, 1838. On or about today, the first Cherokee Indians began the Trail of Tears, a 1,200-mile forced march to Oklahoma. When gold was discovered in their territory, 4,000 Cherokees would die. When 17,000 of them were forced west by President Jackson's Indian Removal Bill. Jackson was also a notorious land speculator, slave trader, and bribe artist. Along the way, the Trail of Tears, 10% of the tribe would be wiped out by disease, fatigue, and exposure. On this date in 1903, Mary Harris Mother Jones leads a rally to Philadelphia to focus public attention on child mutilations in the state textile mills. Also on this date in 1953, Supreme Court Justice stays the execution of the, quote, spies Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, scheduled for tomorrow, which would have been their 14th anniversary. It's only a temporary reprieve as they would be killed in 2 days. Though the United States knew for sure that Ethel Rosenberg had nothing to do with any spying, they did not release this information to the defense team for fear of giving up their state secrets about their new wiretapping ability. So they sent this innocent woman to her death. The government has and will continue to kill people they know to be completely innocent. In one of her last letters before her execution, Ethel Rosenberg wrote, quote, "My husband and I must be vindicated by history. We are the first victims of American fascism," unquote. Actually, they are not the first and won't be the last. Eisenhower would write about this, though they are not currently at war, quote, "The executions were necessary to refute the known convictions of communist leaders all over the world that free governments are notoriously weak and fearful, and that consequently, subversive and other kinds of activities can be conducted against them with no real fear of dire punishment," unquote. And that's why I executed an innocent woman. Well, he didn't really say that, but...
She died a lot harder. When it appeared that she had received enough electricity to kill an ordinary person and had received the exact amount that had killed her husband, the doctors went over and pulled down the cheap prison dress, a little dark green printed job, and placed the stethoscopes to her and then looked at each other rather dumbfounded and seemed surprised that she was not dead. Believing she was dead, the attendants had taken off the ghastly strappings and electrodes and the black belts and so forth. And these had to be readjusted again, and she was given more electricity, which started again that kind of a ghastly plume of smoke that rose from her head and went up against the skylight overhead. After two more of those jolts, Ethel Rosenberg had met a maker.
Also in 1954 in Guatemala, making the world safer for democracy, the U.S. CIA supplies and directs forces to overthrow the democracy, destroying the constitutional elected government of Alvarez. Decades of government-sponsored genocide against Guatemalan Indians will follow, all at the direction of the United Fruit Company of the United States.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Crystal Graham. On this day, June 17th, in 1972, five men were arrested during an attempt to break into the Democratic National Committee's headquarters at the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. During the Watergate trial, it was discovered that all five men were somehow connected to President Richard Nixon's re-election committee, causing many people to suspect the conspiracy involving higher members of the Republican Party. Eventually, it was revealed through the discovery of secret White House tapes that the break-in and the attempts to cover it up were all at the work of top government officials, including the President, the Justice Department, and the CIA. Although the American public was horrified by a political scandal of this magnitude, President Nixon was not legally held accountable, and the others involved received short jail times. The way that white-collar crime is handled in this society is a perfect example of institutionalized classism. Some justice system. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Little more news not reported in history books. 1982, U.S. Interior Secretary James Waite warns the Israeli ambassador that, quote, if liberals of the Jewish community, unquote, oppose his plans for the offshore drilling, quote, they will weaken our ability to be good friends to Israel, unquote. Government and politics as usual. This week in radical history for 1934, the Indian Reorganization Act passes against virtually opposition of every Native American who feel that they're already reorganized enough. Also on the state in 1940, Winston Churchill gives his famous speech and urges perseverance so that future generations remember that, quote, this was their finest hour. Sounds like a lot more blood is about to be spilled again. The same fat lion who earlier declared, quote, your movement, fascism, has abroad rendered the service to the whole world. Italy has shown that there is a way to combat subversive forces, unquote. Winston Churchill, loving Italian fascism.
On this day, June 18th in 1963, African-American community leaders in Boston organized the Stay Out for Freedom boycott, in which at least 3,000 students boycotted the city's segregated public school system. Temporary freedom schools were also set up for the day to educate students about black history and resistance to racism. Nearly 10 years after the Brown v. Board of Ed decision, Boston schools remained segregated and the all-white school board continued to manipulate school boundaries and unfairly allocate resources. It wasn't until 1974, after 11 more years of protesting, that the Federal District Court charged the city of Boston with intentionally segregating its schools.
Also on June 18, 1983, Sally Ride becomes the first U.S. woman in space. 20 years earlier, the nasty backwards Russians sent their first woman in space. Valentina Tresakova circled the Earth for 3 days. Obviously, equality for women was a communist plot. Also in 2001 in England, today the UK Guardian reports travel ban to block anarchist leaders, as street clashes greet the toxic Texan as Bush travels through Europe. Tony Blair and Jack Straw both dismiss the protesters as anarchist traveling circus. Funny, as Bush traveled through Sweden today, at precisely 4:08 p.m., over 1,000 EU protesters dropped their shorts and mooned Bush as he entered his hotel.
The holiday commemorating the emancipation of slaves in the state of Texas, which happened on this day in 1870. Mexico, of which Texas was originally a part, had abolished slavery in 1829, as had the northern states in the U.S., but Texas was colonized by slaveholders from the southern U.S. who fought to secede from Mexico when it outlawed the practice. That led to armed conflict between the U.S. and Mexico and the annexation of Texas by the former, whereupon a bloody civil war was fought to eliminate slavery in the southern states. Texas now recognizes Juneteenth as a state holiday.
Also on this day in 1886, Kangaroo Court of the Eight Anarchists of the Haymarket Bombing begins. In 1902, more Native Americans screw Rama as Congress provides allotments on the Spokane Reservation in Washington State, freeing up what they called, quote, surplus, unquote, land for sale to white farmers.
Police attack striking steelworkers in Youngstown, Ohio on this day in 1937, killing several. The strike against several steel mills led by the Steelworkers Organizing Committee, the predecessor of today's United Steelworkers of America, had shut down much of Youngstown's industry. Yet things were peaceful until on this day the steelworkers' wives and daughters held a Women's Day celebration on the picket lines. And this so angered the local police chief that he ordered his officers to break the pickets up. The violence that ensued is known as the Women's Day Massacre and followed shortly after a similar police assault on unarmed striking steelworkers in Chicago on May 30th of that same year, which is called the Memorial Day Massacre. In both cases, the strike was effectively crushed, but the union was not.
Also on this date in 1985 in El Salvador, contingent of armed gunmen opened fire in an outdoor restaurant in a posh district of San Salvador known as Zona Rosa. 13 are killed, including 4 U.S. Marines and 2 U.S. businessmen. The radio broadcast of June 24th from some rebels say, quote, if the U.S. Army members and the CIA agents died in El Salvador, it is because they came to attack our people. No one had summoned them. They died as a result of the interventionist policy carried out by Ronald Reagan, whose intervention grows day by day. Reagan will have to assume full responsibility for his deeds. Unquote. More U.S. shenanigans in the South. In 1988, Haiti, civilian government is overthrown by U.S.-backed military coup. Also on this date in 1997, Italy, cops raid anarchist centers and homes across the country. The Italian Anarchist Federation denounces the raids as a thinly veiled attempt to intimidate and criminalize the movement. In July of the same year, the judge presiding over the preliminary inquiry of some of the raids reads the following sentence, quote, let us remind you that all the defendants were accused of subversive association, unquote. To this day, neo-Nazis spread throughout Europe. Italy has one of the largest skinhead movements in the Western EU. This week in radical history for June 20th.
On this day, June 20th in 1947, U.S. President Truman vetoed the Taft-Hartley Bill, one of the most anti-labor pieces of legislation in U.S. history. The bill prohibited the phenomena known as the closed shop, a situation in which employees must join a union at a given business as a condition of employment. Without that protection, employers can hire non-union employees to fill positions vacated by union workers and thus undermine the union's bargaining power. The bill also placed several restrictions on political activities of unions, such as making contributions to candidates, and it required union officials to sign pledges stating that they were not members of the Communist Party. Truman spoke eloquently against the bill, but took no actions to discourage Congress's override of his veto. Much of the Taft-Hartley legislation remains in effect today.
On this day, June 20th in 1967, at the height of the Vietnam War, world-renowned boxer Muhammad Ali was convicted of refusing to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces and sentenced to 5 years in prison.
Muhammad Ali was stripped of his heavyweight championship and barred from the boxing ring by every state athletic commission in America for 3.5 years. Ali also publicly denounced the Vietnam War, saying that he himself had nothing against the Vietnamese National Liberation Front. Talk about sacrificing everything for your beliefs. Now that's pretty intense.
This week in radical history for June 21st, 1633, Galileo is forced by the Inquisition to abjure, curse, and detest his Copernican heliocentric views. Remember, folks, the church, the supreme courts, and all forms of governments are full of wise people and are always correct.
Whatever master wants, master gets.
On this day, June 21st in 1877, 10 Irish coal miners in Pennsylvania were executed by hanging after having been convicted, probably falsely, of conspiring to commit murder and other acts of violence on behalf of their fellow miners. The 10 belonged to a secret organization called the Molly Maguires. No evidence directly connected the Mollies to the occasional scuffles and murders that sullied miners' relations, but the coal companies had hired a private detective agency, the Pinkertons, to infiltrate the organization in order to implicate them. The 10 Mollies who were convicted were also prosecuted by an attorney hired by the same coal companies. Meanwhile, coal company thugs would continue to wage a low-intensity war against the miners for another 50 years.
Last in a state, in 1940, U.S. Marine General Smedley Butler lives, best remembered for his book, War is a Racket. Butler was one of the most conscientious, driven, and controversial men ever to wear the uniform of the United States Marine Corps, other than me, that is. Although he rose to the ranks of Major General and was a 2-time winner of the Medal of Honor, Butler is remembered today as a vocal critic of colonialism and the American foreign policy. Here's a short reading from his book, War is a Racket, by Smedley Butler.
Today, Major General Smedley Butler had these words to say at the National VFW.
War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. There are only two things we should fight for. One is the defense of our homes, and the other is the Bill of Rights. War for any other reason is simply a racket. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service as a member of this country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. I helped make Mexico safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National Citibank boys. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefits of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1910. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China, I helped to see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested.
There were sacrificial lambs in the marketplace, so Julius and Ethel, Julius and Ethel. Now that they are gone, you know the truth, you can't come out. They were never proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Julius and Ethel, Julius and Ethel. The people felt they were guilty at the time. Some even said there hadn't been any crime. Julius and Ethel, Julius and Ethel. People look upon this couple with contempt and doubt, but they loved each other right after the time they checked out. Julius and Ethel, Julius and Ethel.
This has been This Week in Radical History, produced from the mobile fortress of Glee Glee Studios. As always, thanks to Radio Roots crew from WBAI in New York and the Neighborhood Network of Columbus, Ohio, whose audio I have gently lifted for this show again. We're going a little long this week, so I'll be cutting off Dylan a little early. I do want to remind you of a couple of things. First, a quote from Emma Goldman I just came across. Quote, "And you, are you so forgetful of your past? Is there no echo in your soul of your poet's songs, your dreamer's dreams, your rebel's calls?" Unquote. And here's one rebel's calls. Lastly, always remember, this poet is forever yours in a struggle. Mike Cannon.
placed the stethoscopes to her and then looked around, looked at each other rather dumbfounded and seemed surprised that she was not dead. Believing she was dead, the attendants had taken off the ghastly strappings and electrodes and the black belts and so forth. And these had to be readjusted again, and she was given more electricity, which started again that kind of a ghastly plume of smoke that rose from her head. After two more of those jolts, Ethel Rosenberg had met a maker. After two more of those jolts, after two more of those jolts, after two more of those jolts, Ethel Rosenberg had met a maker, had met a maker, had met a maker.